This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. This is a national holiday honoring Martin Luther King Jr., the civil rights leader, would have been 73 years old this year. For most of us, national holidays are precious off days where there's time to sleep late, see our friends or family, or hit the malls, personal days. Somehow Martin Luther King Day is different. Sleeping in or shopping hardly seems appropriate for a Nobel Peace Laureate who's celebrated as a moral force, an international symbol of nonviolence and the struggle for racial justice. On this day, we want to ask how you commemorate the legacy of Martin Luther King. What do you do to mark this holiday, if anything? What kind of activities do you think are appropriate? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address, totn@npr.org. And joining us first is Taylor Branch. He's an author working on a trilogy about America and the King years. Two volumes are completed, Parting the Waters and Pillar of Fire. Taylor Branch joins us from his home in Baltimore, Maryland, and welcome.
Thank you, Neil.
What do you do to mark Martin Luther King Day?
Well, I do a lot of radio interviews.
I bet you do.
But I also, for today, I always try to do something a little bit unusual to kind of stretch myself and think about why it is a holiday. Actually, today I gave blood at a church.
I remember once talking with the historian Stephen Ambrose about his initial reluctance to work on a biography of Richard Nixon because he says, well, you know, you just spend, you know, 2 or 3 years, you know, locked in somebody's head. And he didn't care to spend that much time with Richard Nixon, at least not at first. He later got over it. But you have spent a long, long time with Martin Luther King.
Yes, close to 20 years now. And I think it was because the civil rights movement kind of took force of me or took hold of me against my will when I was a teenager growing up in the South in the 50s and 60s, and I've been kind of enthralled for all this time to study the breadth of the stories and the lessons that grow out of it.
By happenstance? By force, you say?
Yes, I wasn't interested in politics. I wasn't particularly interested in race relations, but the gradual force of the sit-ins, as a casual news reader, the sit-ins, the Freedom Riders, and finally the demonstrations in Birmingham in which dogs and fire hoses were turned on young children as young as 6 and 8 years old, mostly girls, just had a profound effect on me. I couldn't understand where that came from and why it seemed to be so close to the bone to both religion and American democracy, what it meant, kind of going against the grain. And so it seemed to me to be of an event of enormous power.
In those days, people would often refer to the movement, and at times, I'm not that much younger than you, at times you could almost feel what they were talking about, the movement, almost like a wave moving. Do you still feel that wave today?
Do I still feel that way about it?
No, do you still
it?
Feel
Absolutely.
That?
I think people consider themselves in a transforming kind of heightened state of patriotism and discovery almost every day. I think the most common metaphor that is used for me in interviewing people who went on demonstrations is the metaphor of a wedding day, that they felt themselves on the brink of a leap of faith, and they didn't know how it was going to turn out, but their knees were shaking, but they were somehow making witness and testing themselves in a leap of faith, even with their enemies. That's what nonviolence was about turning your enemies into fellow citizens. So it's a pretty remarkable period of history in embracing movement in every sense of the word, from a small sense of being moved to great historical currents that change how many voters we have in America and change everything from the status of women to the status of citizenship.
That's an interesting answer. It was actually not the question that I asked, but I was wondering if you still feel that wave. Do you still feel the force, or has that period in history passed?
Oh, do you Do you mean, do I think there is still a movement in the United States? Mm-hmm. Absolutely not.
And what happened?
Well, these things are cyclical. America frequently struggles over what equality and democracy means, and often races at the center. But you can't do it all the time; it's too intense,
mm-hmm.
and people lose the discipline or lose sight of it, and conditions change. I mean, we had an awful lot of fundamental change to adjust to once the civil rights movement ended segregation and discrimination not only by race but by sex, and then added 5 million new voters to the rolls because black people had not been permitted to vote in the South, which changed the whole structure of partisan politics in the country. That was a lot to absorb, and nonviolence became passé to the point that people now find it hard to acknowledge that most of the great changes and historical changes in America were produced as long as nonviolence was at the center of the movement, and when it died away, so did the movement.
We're asking today what you are doing to commemorate the occasion of Martin Luther King Day and remember someone who's not that long ago in history and whose mark on America is so clear and obvious to everyone who looks around. Our telephone number, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. And our first caller is Alan, who joins us on the line, I guess appropriately enough, from Birmingham, Alabama.
New York.
I'm sorry?
New York.
It's Binghamton, New York? Or
Binghamton, New York.
We got the wrong city here on the line. But go ahead and tell us what you're doing on Martin Luther King Day, Alan.
Okay, I'm an activist in the community. What I do is I take leaflets around the community and present them to people. And what I did today, this morning, was show the words of Martin Luther King and disseminated them throughout the community. I'd like to share them with you. In this moment of our anguish, do we have the strength, the will, the moral will to stop long enough to try to look at ourselves through the eyes of our enemy? And in that journey, will we glean any knowledge that we might understand why those who are our enemies hate us so much? And I think after September 11th, this is extraordinarily cogent. We failed to do this. What we did instead was we went ahead and started bombing, and we can see that our leaders in this so-called war on terrorism, Paul Wolfowitz, Dick Cheney, etc., are in fact the major terrorists in the world. And we can see that we, as the United States, have been leading this war on terrorism, and our media has been propagandizing the public for years and years to not show them, national propaganda radio included, yourself,
mm-hmm.
Ismael Neal, that, in fact, we have been lying, as in the Gulf of Tonkin, as in the Kuwaiti daughters being on the House of Congress, to the people about Osama bin Laden as well. The list is long. It's endless to hide from them what is really at hand here. And why, instead of the programs that you run consistently, are you not doing the beautiful things that Martin Luther King did and embraced, and showing the truth to people, telling the truth to people, and constantly preaching through all your think tanks and experts the message of violence, hatred, and fear? And why will you not bring in real people who have the wherewithal, not these so-called experts, these military people, to show that this world can be a peaceful place, and here are the means and methodologies of it, okay?
Okay.
Why can we not get billions of dollars into social programs and put this instead into military spending? Why is this kept from the public, Neil? What will you do about this yourself tomorrow? Will you be able to come on the program again tomorrow and continue to perpetuate the propaganda that you're putting forth to people?
Well, if I were as eloquent as Martin Luther King, I might have other options. But, Alan, thanks very much for your call. Taylor Branch, Martin Luther King, there was an important moment in the 1960s. Martin Luther King initially declined to discuss the Vietnam War as an issue. That was the conflict that was raging at that time. Then he decided to go ahead and speak about it. Can you talk to us for a moment about the process of that decision?
Yes, he spoke against the war right when it started in 1965, in fact, the very week that the bombing started. and the reaction, but it just so happened that that was occurring at the peak of Selma when he was trying to get the Voting Rights Act through, and a lot of people hadn't even noticed that there was a war going on yet, and the administration, the Johnson administration, had meetings with him and told him that the war wasn't going to last very long and that if he'd hold back, they would end the war quickly. Secretary of Ambassador of the United Nations Goldberg told him that in a private meeting. And King did. It was very controversial for him to criticize the war. He held his tongue through the year 1966 and then apologized because he said the war had continued until it had envenomed the whole political climate, and that he felt he had made a mistake by agreeing not to speak out against the war. And he finally made a major speech on April 4th, 67, exactly a year to the day before he was killed at Riverside Church in New York about the war, and was roundly denounced by everybody from the New York Times to the Washington Post and the press for sticking his nose where it didn't belong, since he was considered to be a race leader and not a peace leader. So it was a very controversial episode in his life. He was also criticized roundly by other civil rights leaders who felt that by appearing to be unpatriotic, he was hurting the civil rights movement. It was a painful and difficult decision for him, and very controversial.
Our next caller is Pam, who joins us on the line from San Diego.
Well, hello there, folks, and
hi.
Hello, Taylor Branch.
How are you?
I am just fine. In fact, I'm all the better for your books, and today I'm picked up Parting the Waters to read it. It's a great story. It would be like fiction if I hadn't lived through it. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
And now on Saturday, San Diego has its Martin Luther King Parade this Saturday before the holiday, and an all-people's breakfast this morning. There is one thing following up on that.
Pam, could I ask a question first?
Yes.
What is a Martin Luther King parade like? We saw all the marches, all those years ago. What's a parade like?
Well, the parade isn't like the marches, and I must say I would be reminiscent for the marches. It's floats, high school bands, lots of young people. And so the greatest dynamic for me in the parade, I've marched in it for a number of years with our local Peace and Justice Commission, but the great thing is in the staging ground where everyone's practicing and get the energy of the people who want to celebrate Dr. King.
Mm-hmm.
I must say that I also usually am handing out a leaflet from our group saying, what would Dr. King say about today? Because it's just filled with military units.
Hmm.
And no question, there has been enormous strides in the military for people of color. I think that it's just not necessarily appropriate to honor Dr. King with those displays and to have a separate military celebration of the advances made in the military for people of color and of women and other minorities.
Those things are worth celebrating. You're just saying not maybe on this day.
Exactly. Certainly, because people have a right to be happy about the advances that they've made. But yes, it does seem to be a rather odd memorial, I prefer to see a celebration than a memorial to Dr. King.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You said you were handing out leaflets as well?
Yes.
And what were they about?
Really about the military presence. What would Dr. King think about today's commemoration?
Those are interesting thoughts. Thanks very much for sharing them with us.
We have parades here in Baltimore, too. Their children and high school bands and people from the immigrant nationalities and ordinary people march down Martin Luther King Boulevard in Baltimore. And there are some military units involved. Dr. King was never hostile to the military. He was just hostile to violence.
Taylor Branch, an author who's working on a trilogy about America and the King years. And we're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about Martin Luther King Day commemoration. What do you do to commemorate the holiday of the great civil rights leader? Our guest is Taylor Branch, an author who is working on a trilogy Two of his volumes are completed, Parting the Waters and Pillar of Fire. And joining us now is John Hope Franklin, Sr. He's an historian and author of many books on African-American history, including From Slavery to Freedom, A History of African-Americans. And he's speaking to us from his home in Durham, North Carolina. Mr. Franklin, welcome.
Thank you very much.
What do you do on this day to remember Martin Luther King?
Well, I haven't done a great deal. I've been recovering from some illnesses, and therefore I've not been able to get around. But at Duke University, we have a very elaborate program. And last evening, I went to hear Merle Evers Williams speak to an enormous crowd at the Duke Chapel, and the reception for her afterwards. Today there are a number of seminars and meetings in here in Durham, and just this afternoon we're going, later on, we're going to the Hayti Heritage Center, where there's a large display and demonstration exhibit of things pertaining to the King years.
You obviously are old enough to remember the man.
Yes.
I wonder, do you see any discrepancy between the man who was Martin Luther King and the national icon who was Martin Luther King?
No, I don't see any significant difference. I have always resisted I don't know whether Taylor Branch would agree with me or not, the cult of personality that threatens to engulf the King movement, and that was true when he was alive, and it continues to be true. There's a remarkable difference, it seems to me, between paying tribute to a great leader, which Martin Luther King certainly was,
mm-hmm.
on the one hand, and on the other hand, of slipping into a kind of sentimental cult of personality.
How do you think that manifests itself?
Well, it manifests itself in, I would say, superficial, rather shallow tributes to him by people who don't understand who he was, what he stood for, and that sort of thing. And not being willing or able or inclined to look at the man in depth and see what he really was, and see what it is that he was that from which we could extrapolate. I saw this in Montgomery, Alabama, at the end of the march in 1965, when people were yelling and screaming about Martin Luther King, our leader, which I had no problem with, and paying little attention to the large numbers of others who were involved in the, not only in the parade and in the march from Selma to Montgomery, but also young men and women who had threatened their lives in voter registration drives in various parts of the South, who now turned up in Montgomery. And they were, to a considerable extent, ignored, so far as I could see.
Hmm.
I was merely a bystander. I had marched, but I was not involved in the decision-making, and I saw them just sort of wandering around there just like the rest of us, and I had the feeling that they would do a little more in the way of tribute and credit for what they had done to make even that day a success than anyone was giving them credit for.
Taylor Branch, I wondered if you had a thought on what John Hope Franklin has been talking about.
Absolutely. I think that there is a tendency to, it's inevitable to some degree that you marbleize heroes and make busts out of them and simplify them and that sort of thing. But King in particular, this is a patriotic holiday about what he meant in a revolution, America's continuing revolution in freedom. And it was a struggle, an interior struggle, and we don't learn as much from it as we should if we forget. He was not an up close and personal figure in American life. Movement was very controversial and filled with anguish. And I think when you study Professor Franklin's work, you see that race relations really has always been a light and frequently an engine of the only story America has, which is what does freedom mean? And and King was right in a kind of a crucible right in the middle of that. And so I think basically we oversimplify the King holiday whenever we make it kind of a tame holiday and forget that he was a figure of American history and struggle.
Yes.
I was going to say, Professor Franklin, people in authority in those days weren't issuing a lot of proclamations on his behalf.
Right, right. Let me say here that Taylor Branch got it right. Anyone who reads him can understand this whole period because...
Oh, I'm going to retire now.
Yes,
that's a lot to me. I have all of Dr. Franklin's books on my shelf and have admired him for decades.
He has all of the things in Parting of the Waters and his other volumes that I'm talking about. That is of looking at the period as a period and seeing exactly what was going on and giving people credit for what they have done, despite the fact that they might not be at the head of the line in the march.
That's right.
Well, John Hope Franklin, thank you so much for joining us and spending at least part of this day with us.
My great pleasure, Neil.
I'm honored.
Pleasure.
John Hope Franklin, Sr., an historian. He's the author of many books on African-American history, including From Slavery to Freedom, A History of African-Americans. And he was with us by phone from his home in Durham, North Carolina. And we have a caller who may have a point on some of the things that Professor Franklin was talking about. This is John, who joins us now on the line from Philadelphia.
Yes, Neil.
Hi.
Neil, you mentioned the eloquence of Dr. King, yet Leonard Pitts of the Miami Herald pointed out that there's an impasse on the building of the monument to honor Dr. King on the Washington Mall due to the attempt to extract or exploit a fee for King's image and words.
I'm sorry, I didn't understand that word.
Pardon?
Due to a controversy over, could you just repeat what you said? I didn't understand.
Controversy over the impasse of trying to extract a fee.
Oh, a fee?
Fee, money.
Yes, I see. Okay.
For King's image and words. My question would be, would the King family prefer the words of Reverend Ralph Abernathy depicting King's last evening? I think that's the key question. Whose words do they want to become the coinage?
Taylor Branch, the family did cause quite a controversy this past year or so when they did license the use of Dr. King's image and his words for television commercials.
Yes, well, national monuments are always controversial, and subsequent generations after the great people are frequently controversial, and there has been a lot of politics over that memorial, as there have been over various proposals to create a national memorial for to slavery in the Middle Passage. A lot of complicated politics and squabbles over money. I'm sorry that they're continuing. We have them over the King Center as well in Atlanta, having to do with access to the historical materials there. And I'm hoping that some agreement will be worked out to transfer those materials as they want to the Library of Congress so that everybody can have them more openly. The monument to Dr. King along the Mall is still in consideration. I don't think that these things tend to take time. It's been a relatively short-lived crisis so far. I just hope that it doesn't drag out so that it imperils it in the long run.
John, I wondered, did it change your impression of either King or, well, certainly not Martin Luther King. All of it happened long after he was dead.
No, it's the issue of, you know, is his image and words going to be restricted from future generations? And is it always going to be looked upon? Are we going to use the Bono legislation to prevent people having access to a person's legacy?
Interesting questions.
Well, that's certainly not something one of the remarkable things about Dr. King, people have criticized him for a number of things, but nobody ever for being money hungry. He died intestate without a will. Had less than $30,000 in his total estate. Some of that was already earmarked for the movement. He essentially devoted all of his income and all of his speaking powers to the movement and was not about money. So I hope that his legacy won't be about money either.
John, thanks very much for the call.
You're most welcome, Neil.
Our telephone number, by the way, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is TOTN@npr.org. And our next caller is John, who joins us from Norman, Oklahoma.
Yes, I wanted to comment about a couple of things. I'm trying to get my students here at the University of Oklahoma to think about the fact that Martin Luther King lived his life in service of others. And it's interesting that we should point out that he donated all his financial means to the movement as well as his time and energy. What I think that he would be doing today is he would be living his life in the present with the lessons from the past, and he would focus not so much on the racial status of people, but the fact that so much is being done economically to disenfranchise people, and he would pull the thin veil away from policies that did just that, kept the lower class in their place and working for the lowest wages possible while the rich got richer. And I'll take my comments off the air.
Okay. Taylor Branch?
Yes. Well, I think that's fair to say. In fact, I think it's important to say that his whole life and career was not defined by black and white entirely, although, of course, he's best known for the bus boycott and the struggle against segregation. That was part of it. But he always said it's a struggle about justice and injustice, and it's a struggle for the soul of democracy. It's really a citizen struggle. What does it mean to live in a democracy? What does equality mean? Is it a quality of essence? Is it a quality of outcome? And that's what makes it appropriate to have him a federal holiday, because it's essentially his life is an example about a citizen's relationship to the government, what we should do to protect and to build our freedom. And so it does get in precisely to the larger questions of American history that the caller mentioned. That's why he belongs there with Jefferson and the presidents for whom we have holidays.
Well, Taylor Branch, thank you so much for speaking with us today. When is your third volume due out, by the way?
Sometime next year, I hope. It's on my screen right now. I'm trying to finish it. It's due in April of 2003, and I hope we'll be out later next year.
Can you tell us what part are you up to?
I'm in 1966.
So just about pounding down the stretch.
I hope so. Yes, sir.
Well, good luck to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Neil.
Taylor Branch's first two volumes are Parting the Waters and Pillar of Fire. That's a trilogy about the King years. We're listening to you today. Your remarks about what you're doing to commemorate the holiday for Martin Luther King. Our telephone number is 800-989-8255. And why don't we listen to some of Martin Luther King's words himself. Here's an excerpt from the speech he made accepting the Nobel Peace Prize.
Man must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method is love. I believe that even amid today's mortar bursts and whining bullets, there is still hope for a brighter tomorrow.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now from Durham, North Carolina, is Melissa Solomon, a graduate student at Duke University. Melissa Solomon, welcome.
Thank you.
We heard earlier John Hope Franklin was talking about a big commemoration program there at Duke University. Were you part of it?
I was very happy to be in the audience. I've been on the planning committee all year for our Martin Luther King commemoration, and Merle Evers Williams gave the most beautiful talk. It was really something. I wish you all could come down to Duke and see what we're up to.
So how did you get involved in this program?
Well, you know, Dr. King's message means a lot to me, that it's important to have a method of struggle against injustice that does not stoop to violence. And when I first came to Duke, Duke did commemorate the holiday, but there were still classes going on, so one couldn't get out of classes in order to commemorate. And I'm pleased and proud to say that now Duke is in its third year of having classes canceled so that students really can observe the holiday to the fullest.
Now, you're obviously a lot younger than Taylor Branch or John Hope Franklin Sr. How did you become aware of the message of Martin Luther King?
You know, I think that it's important to be committed to anti-racism. It's not whether one can interrogate oneself as a racist, but whether really one makes a political commitment to being anti-racist. and those messages spoke in the 50s and 60s, and they speak just as loudly today.
But where did you find them? Did you go read his speeches out of a book? Did you listen to his addresses? Where did you encounter them?
Oh, yes. I have encountered his writings and his speeches, and I also teach a course in American literature as a graduate student. I do some graduate teaching. I teach a course called Slavery and Emancipation in American Literature.
Mm-hmm.
And we read all kinds of documents from Frederick Douglass up to Martin Luther King.
And but when you first heard about Martin Luther King, it must have been in elementary school or from your parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember those programs? And they're obviously a lot simpler than what you're doing at Duke, but college does tend to be a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, Dr. King has always been my hero in different ways, from early childhood to now.
So what are you doing today?
Okay, well, today I just got through listening to a panel on scholarship and activism, in which graduate students spoke about how they marry their commitment to academia with their commitments to scholarly activism. And when we finish our call, I'm going to go up to a cultural extravaganza in which we have performances by student groups celebrating the day. And when that is through, we are having a lecture by Aaron Magruder, the Boondocks comic strip artist.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a beautiful full day of events at Duke. I wish you could come down and check out what we're doing. Our events last the whole week.
Well, I wish I could, too. But thanks very much for spending at least part of the day with us.
Yes, thank you.
And good luck to you.
Thank you, and to you.
That's Melissa Solomon, who's speaking with us. She's a graduate student at Duke University and speaking to us from there. Again, our telephone number, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our next caller is Tom, who's on the line with us from Fairbanks, Alaska.
Hi, that's Tom Berglund. I don't have nearly I'm not nearly as eloquent as many of your other speakers. I just like to say that, and I've never, in the past, I've never celebrated the King holiday. I just, I don't know, maybe it's... We're so far removed, maybe, from the rest of the world that it's just not as, I guess, as evident up here. But one way or the other, my family and I, over the weekend, watched the movie Roots, and I think that's how we're going to commemorate it every year from now on.
And what did you learn from it?
I believe it was what... I mean, it's not as... I believe I learned, for the most part... that what Martin Luther King's message was, you know, what he stood for and what he was all about.
Well, Tom, I'm afraid we're out of time, but thanks very much for your call, and good luck to you, too.
Thank you.
I'm Neil Conan, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. And today we're talking about fitting observances for Martin Luther King holiday. And we're also listening to a few of the remarks that Martin Luther King made during his life. These remarks we're about to listen to the night before he was assassinated in Memphis, Tennessee.
Let us rise up tonight with a greater readiness. Let us stand with a greater determination. And let us move on in these powerful days, these days of challenge, to make America what it ought to be. We have an opportunity to make America a better nation.
And joining us now is Beth Craddock, a parent and a board member of the Interracial Family Circle, a support group for interracial families in the Washington, D.C. area. Welcome to the program, Beth Craddock.
Thank you.
I understand you've been part of an organizing group for a Martin Luther King Day celebration for some time now.
That's right. This is the third year that we have had the celebration of Dr. King's birthday. A few years ago, several of us noticed that there wasn't a way to celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday that was really as joyful and child-oriented as we'd like to see. So we decided to start this 3 years ago.
So what do you do?
We have a program of children's activities, including things like making creating a dream mural, making friendship beads, and then we have a music and dance program of celebrates interracialism. Today we had an interracial dance company, dance place. We had the D.C. Children's Choir singing civil rights songs. We had African drumming group and dancers, and then we had fabulous singer who led us in the Lift Every Voice and Sing at the end.
Now, you've got one of your performers there with you, don't you?
Well, this is my daughter, who was one of two children who recited part of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech.
Can we speak with her?
You may.
Okay.
Hello.
Hi, Emma.
Hi.
Can you tell us what you did today to celebrate Martin Luther King's birthday?
I said part of the I Have a Dream speech, and I sang in the children's youth choir.
Do you still remember what you said?
Excuse me?
Do you still remember the part of the speech that you performed today?
Yeah, I didn't memorize it, but I had it on paper.
Uh-huh.
And I did the Let Freedom Ring part.
Uh-huh. Can you give us just a little bit of it if you remember?
Okay. Okay. Free at last, free at last. Thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
Well, thanks very much, Emma.
You're welcome.
Emma Gorin speaking with us, and we also heard from her mother, Beth Craddock, a parent and a board member of the Interracial Family Circle, a support group for interracial families in the Washington, D.C. area, about what they're doing to celebrate the Martin Luther King Jr. holiday. How about you? 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. Our next caller is Celine, who joins us from Oak Park, Illinois.
Hi, how are you?
Very well, thanks.
I'd like to tell about what our Catholic grade school does in Oak Park, Illinois.
Sure.
For the last 8 years, because it's a Catholic grade school, we have a regular schedule of masses and prayer services. We have held a prayer service in honor of Martin Luther King, in which we feature children as peacemakers. We started off by telling the story of the Children's March in Birmingham, and the students were so impressed that children can take an active part in breaking down Jim Crow laws and breaking down barriers and creating peace, that we kept this theme going. And ever since then, we've had these themes of children as peacemakers.
And that must provide a tremendous amount of energy.
You know, the neat thing about it is that we have one story after another. They just keep coming. The next year, we told the story of Ruby Bridges. Ruby Bridges was the girl who single-handedly integrated the New Orleans public school system at the age of 6. Do you remember this story?
Vaguely, but help me out.
Well, she was, when the New Orleans public school system was forced to be integrated, she enrolled in the school, and all the white parents pulled out their students. And she had to cross in front of, she was escorted by federal marshals, and she had to march in front of all these angry parents. In fact, Norman Rockwell drew a picture called The Problem We Share of a little black girl in a white dress being escorted by federal marshals.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, it's a very moving story. We told that story, and Ruby Bridges actually came to our school.
Wow.
And sat with us.
Huh.
And then the next year we told about, we had a Holocaust, a child Holocaust survivor who lives in Skokie, Illinois, came and talked about his struggle as a Jewish boy in Poland and then his survival of the Holocaust. And since then, year after year, we've had one marvelous story after another of children as peacemakers.
That's a great program. Thanks so much for calling and telling us about it.
Thank you.
Okay. Let's see if we can get some more callers in now. Kevin joins us from Albany, Georgia.
Hi, Neil.
Hi.
Well, tonight I'm involved in our community MLK Day celebration, which features a play based on Dr. King's role in the Albany Civil Rights Movement. I'm cast as the controversial police chief who put Dr. King and everyone else who had the gall to participate in demonstrations here in Albany. And I'm not a thespian, so this is particularly challenging for me.
But you get the bad guy.
I'm the bad guy.
And who wrote this play?
A local playwright who has written other historical pieces based on the civil rights movement in Albany. It's a very well-written script, and it features freedom singers who, the same ones who participated in the movement in the '60s. It's a very, very special moment tonight.
Now, all of that aside, it's a moment when, as you say, you're a non-actor. You're about to go on stage. You need a little courage, don't you?
Well, I guess so. I am scared to death. But what I like most, I think, is my 7-year-old son will be there, and he'll witness this recreation of history. And hopefully I'm helping to teach him that white people, which I'm a white person, particularly those of us in the Deep South, need to risk losing friends for the good of promoting peace and harmony, which is what I'm doing tonight by taking the stage.
Well, good luck to you. You're going to need it.
Thank you.
Okay. And let's see. Sally joins us now from Edmond, Oklahoma.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I wanted to tell you what I'm doing today.
Okay.
To celebrate or commemorate. I'm getting a packet of things together to mail to my daughter. My daughter is a sophomore in college in Washington, D.C., and we had a conversation the other day on the phone, a long conversation about racism, because she's taking a course in African-American literature.
Hmm.
And as we talked about it, I thought, I need to send her some of the things that have been really influential to me. So I've got 2 books and a movie that I'm sending her in hopes that it'll help her.
Which books?
Well, one book is called Learning to Be White, which sounds like it's a terrible title, but it's by a woman named Sandeko, who's an African-American, who's taken a real close look at what the whole concept of whiteness and of race, how it came about in America, and how it is being handed down, from parent to child.
And what's the other one?
The other one is called Death in the Promised Land, which is about the Tulsa race riots.
Yes.
Here in Oklahoma.
Yeah. And the movie?
The movie is Birth of a Nation, which is an awful movie. I mean, it's a wonderful movie cinematically, and it's
an important movie in the history of the movies.
The history of movies, but it is an important movie culturally. And when you see it, and you know its history of how widely it was seen, you can see how much something like that can influence. And it gives the whole idea of how the media can influence us and the question of race.
Well, thanks very much, and I hope your daughter enjoys the package. Well,
thank you.
Okay. Wanted to end with one email that we got, anonymous, please, it says. My son attends a small private Jewish middle school in St. Paul, Minnesota. They did not have the day off, as do many of his friends who attend public school. Today, my son and his classmates attended the official State of Minnesota celebration of Martin Luther King Day. They participated in a rally and a march and heard speakers give testimony to the dreams of Martin Luther King. Back in school this afternoon, they will have special programs highlighting the era of civil rights and Martin Luther King and talk a lot about the work that still needs to be done. I'm proud the school has chosen to conduct this kind of programming instead of giving the day off. There's much that can be taught to these middle school students about their responsibility to continue repairing our world, in quotation marks. P.S. A group of my son's friends went snow tubing for the day. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.